reading from Ephesians.
A great reading about reconciling work and how we understand the plural views that exist within the church's common life. So I thought I'd say a little word to you about Ephesians first, and about this reading in particular, and then maybe see if it could be a segue into general convention stuff or not. And then at the question and answer time, you might have some questions, and there are other people here who can give answers from their perspective as well. So let me talk about that. One of the things I want to say at the beginning is, you know, Episcopalians understand themselves as a church, not a sect. And there's a theologian who, at the early part of the 20th century, named Ernst Troeltsch, who wrote some books about all of this, the differences between church and sect and various kinds of things. We're church. In fact, Barbara Harris, the retired suffragan bishop of Massachusetts, when she preached a sermon at the General Convention, got up and said, "Hello, church." So it was a good reminder of the fact that we're church, and we were doing the church's business there. And what's going on in Ephesians is something about how we come to understand the nature of church and the processes at work in our common life together as church. I've said some of this to you before, but it all bears repeating in my view. I've come to that conclusion. Ephesians is, in the view of many New Testament scholars, not all by any means, but of a number of biblical scholars, not to have been written by Paul himself. So to use the fancy terminology, we would refer to Ephesians as Deutero-Pauline. Who cares? Well, the reason it may be important is that it tells us something about faithfulness to the witness of Paul, and also about how the Pauline churches themselves came to grips with the challenges and the opportunities in front of them after Paul died, after he was martyred. How do they now understand themselves as church, both faithful to the theological outlook, if that's the right thing to say, of Paul, who had a particular understanding of the importance of the mighty works of Jesus Christ? And how do we understand then being faithful to those principles but meeting new opportunities? Or historical realities have come now into place that were not there during the preaching and teaching of Paul. They were not principal concerns of his. So here's one from today's reading. Paul speaks about the Gentiles and the Jews. And he refers to the Gentiles as the uncircumcision and the Jews as the circumcision. This epistle was written in a period where, certainly in Ephesus and in other places, the great tension that had existed between Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians had lessened. They had now come to terms with being together as church. And as the result of that, they understood themselves in a new way. But they also understood themselves to still be plural, a community of plural views about what is necessary in our common life. So the Ephesian church, to some degree, was a little messy. And one of the things I learned at the General Convention of the Episcopal Church is that we're a little messy. Things are a little messy. And perhaps that has always been so in the church's common life. People are of more than one mind. And yet, in the midst of all of this, Paul is at pains, or the author of Ephesians is at pains, to talk about the importance of the ministry of reconciliation. And that the church's business has something to do with being engaged in the ministry of reconciliation. And that all Christian people need to labor to do this. There are some interesting things in here that I just want to comment as sort of side issues. You know, Paul's understanding of the relationship between the law and the gospel isn't, well, now we have the gospel and we don't need the law. There is absolutely no evidence, except for reasons of pastoral expediency, that Paul gave up being a faithful Jew in his lifetime all the time. There's simply no evidence for that. But what Paul came to the conclusion was this, that you don't need to keep the law to be in. And the Gentile Christians do not now need to start doing this, nor to, in the case of males, become circumcised to be part of the community of the redeemed. And the reason for that is that while God's law may exist and Paul may still keep it and believe that to some degree it is trumped by the mighty works of Jesus Christ. And for him that would mean the work on the cross. And therefore, when we speak about who's in and who is out, the relationship between law and gospel does not become the principal location for determining that. And in fact, the object of the church's life ought to be laboring to find ways to keep people in. That this is what we're engaged with. I read a commentary when I came back at 5:30 from Anaheim yesterday. I came to the office and took a commentary out about Ephesians. I just wanted to make sure that I was on the right track in some way about this. What do you think about this quotation? Christians today living in a world full of walls and borders that we construct to keep others out and to create the sense of our own security from those whom we consider harmful, distasteful, sinful, or just different, the varied imagery of this passage from Ephesians celebrates the gospel's power to demolish barriers and to transform aliens into citizens, and to let God be manifested in the presence of communities of believers. So what Paul is speaking of is the missionary work of the church. A lot of talk at the General Convention about missionary work, and it focused itself on the catechism in the Book of Common Prayer. Not explicitly, but it was said over and over again. The mission of the church is to restore all people to unity with God and each other in Christ. And so if we as Episcopalians think about our missionary work, that is the location for it. We heard a sermon by a leading light of what is now called the emergent church movement in the United States. This is a very interesting phenomenon that is happening. And sometime we may talk about the emergent church in more detail. But this man's name is Brian McLaren. And he wrote a book entitled, he's written more than one, but the one that I read was called Generous Orthodoxy. And his view is that he's not an Episcopalian, but he said this is the Episcopal moment. And that what we have to learn to do is to become evangelists, which we detest. We detest the terminology. For us, it is value laden. It has all kinds of connotations that we find not to our liking. And yet it is absolutely essential that we do this and that we locate, at least in part, our understanding of the church's mission in the ministry of reconciliation. And we have ample biblical support to do this. We have ample support from the church's tradition, and we have ample support from our reason and experience. So let me segue now to some vague conversation about the General Convention and what it did. Remember that many of the things that people have found problematic in the church's life, in terms of decisions that have been made and a momentum that now has been established with regard to issues of justice and equity for all people in the church's common life. The location for why that has happened is not a group of liberals who swung their tootsies over the gunwales one morning and said, how are we going to do the greatest harm to the church today? I know, let's bring more justice and equity and inclusion in our common life. That's the way to get everybody all upset. The reason why this has emerged is because of what I call the pastoral experience of the church. I've been a pastor for over 30 years now, and I've heard a lot of stories from people about their lives. And I want to tell you, I have to say this, when I was at the General Convention, there were times when I was so proud to be an Episcopalian, I almost was twins. I just did. And some of it was being moved to tears by listening to the stories of people who wanted to stay in and for a long time were thwarted at every turn. It is an amazement to me that they wanted to stay in. I can't understand it. And yet they did. And now, the pastoral experience of the church, understood as both the constituency in what we call the House of Deputies and the constituency that we call the House of Bishops, have been continuously moving in a direction that seeks to find ways to keep people in as opposed to excluding them. Now, there is a significant minority who demur on this matter. I have to say, though, I've only been to one General Convention as a deputy, and I think I was benefited in my virgin outing by the fact that those individuals who were the most vocal and problematic are out, they've left. So that means that while there were people there who have serious issues, they have mainly decided to stay in and harumph. You know the difference? And that means that they are going to in some way be part of something as we move forward and so forth. And some of the bishops that had in the recent past been somewhat reticent about these developments voted in favor of what I'm going to speak about now, giving focus to this. Let me say, the news media is going to talk to you all about BO25, which is the thing that we did to recognize how the Episcopal Church understands itself at this moment. A truthful description of who we are. These issues focus themselves in human sexuality and being inclusive with regard to our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters. A sermon I heard from the former Bishop of Alaska, who's now the Provost of Grace Cathedral, Stephen Charlton, preached a very good sermon on the environment. And he said, we've been spending way too much time on this stuff. Way too much time. Because an alarm bell has gone off, and we're now going to have wars over water in the next few decades that are going to make wars over oil look like amateur. Whether that is true or not, I don't know. But it was a pretty interesting comment about where the priorities now need to be placed. And yet at the same time, this isn't an either-or exercise. It's a both-and exercise. And so these issues need to come before people in a way. I can't tell you how impressed I was by the generosity and the graciousness expressed by people on all sides of these questions. Nobody called anybody any names. There was no yelling and shouting. There was no recrimination. There was no anything. It was quite amazing to see that happen. The General Convention of the Episcopal Church has 830 deputies in the House of Deputies. It is the largest legislative body in the world. So you'd think out of 830 people there'd be some jerks, wouldn't you? But they all, for one guy was on the razor's edge at one point. but he reined himself in. And that was probably a good thing. And we were not engaged in that. The theme of the convention, as this relates to Ephesians, about the ministry of reconciliation, was a term, an African word that was used as the theme of the convention. And the African word is Ubuntu. And Ubuntu means I and you and me, sort of sounds like John's gospel, but it also means I am because you are. And the network of connection that we all have is a consequence of how we might understand ourselves as church. As you can imagine, a lot of us were a little like Ubuntu. Where in the world, Ubuntu? Even the chaplain cracked wise about Ubuntu at the beginning. Frank Wade. And yet we began to see, as the days went on, the power of that understanding of human relationship. Mary Morrison, who is an alternate deputy to General Convention from this diocese, was in the elevator about four days ago, and it was at the end of a long legislative day, and she was in the elevator with four or five people, and somebody was talking about Ubuntu, and a guy in the corner of the elevator said, "I'm going upstairs to have a little me by me by myself." Sometimes it's a necessary thing, right? So maybe we'll want to get to some questions and answers. Just let me say about this. Remember, every time during the green season, I talk to you about the cost, the nature, and the ways and the means of Christian discipleship. Faithfulness produces a cost sometimes. It produces a way forward. And it also is a way of being authentic. The Episcopal Church, I think, did that this last couple of weeks. And I'm very proud of that. I also believe something someone said to me that has implications beyond all of this for our own personal daily living. And that is that you and I cannot live and act based on fearfulness. It is simply not a plan to do that. And so fear about what somebody else is going to do because you have in some way decided to move in a direction is what you have to just learn to be non-anxious about. You know? We need to do what we need to do. And that's what we did. So this week, think about being a minister of reconciliation. Think about how you might be an effective missionary and commend your greatest place of safety and assurance. You know, I've always said to you that the best kind of evangelism is not specifically talking to people about religious matters. But people, as they know you, will say one day, just out of the blue, "How do I get what you have? How do I get what you have?" And then you have an opportunity to do some great missionary work. Amen. Coffee, and then questions.
Mr. Strauss is one of my favorite kids.